Welcome to Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday. With your host, Jaguars.com senior editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars Monday on News Talk Radio WOKV is brought to you by Community First Credit Union, Prudential Network Realty, the Jacksonville Transportation Group, Baptist Health, and by Ticket Exchange. Now, here's your host, the always happy, always positive, always effervescent, man of a thousand smiles, Vic Ketchman.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Jaguars Monday. And yes, I am a man of a thousand smiles. I'm enjoying the heck out of this season. And you know who else is enjoying the heck out of this season is Coach Jack Del Rio. He said it today. Yes, he said it at today's press conference. He said I'm going to get the exact quote. Give me one moment here to look at my story, and I'll
read. Did he use those words? I'm enjoying the heck out of the season?
No, I'm going to give you the quote. He said
the quote was Vito. I'm enjoying the heck out of the season.
He said it was something like, I can't remember. Here it is right here. It's the most fun coaching I've had in a long time.
Good.
No, I mean, 7 years the team's head coach, which isn't a long time. So certainly it's the most fun he's had coaching since 2007. But it sounded a long time. 2007 is not a long time. But you know what? I think we can get the specific answer to this, because I wanted to keep it a surprise, but what the heck? Coach Del Rio said he might stop in here in the second half hour of the show, you know, spend some time with us. And I'm looking forward to that, because I'd like him to talk a little bit more about the fun he's having coaching this team, because this really has become a fun team. It's become a fun team for everybody. It's comeback ways are certainly fun to watch 2 weeks in a row. And when you factor in the St. Louis overtime win, that's three in, the last five games, I think. One, two, three, four, five. Yes, three of the last five games have resulted in some kind of come from behind, some kind of rally that delivered the win. And that's fun. People like that. And it has a way of lifting teams. It's an uplifting kind of thing. Go back to 1996. I'm not comparing this team to 96. No. That's a special bunch there. But they had that quality. I can distinctly remember two come-from-behind wins against Baltimore that really drove this team in that run at the end of the year toward the AFC title game.
Yeah, it's funny. Brian said the same thing yesterday during the tailgate show, that he didn't want to compare him to 06 and 96, but you get that kind of feeling.
Yeah, you do. The thing is, that team came from 4-7 and never lost again until they got to the AFC title game. You see, where this team is 6-4, and I just don't see this team winning out. I just don't see that happening.
Right.
This team is about to hit the rugged games on its schedule. The stiffs are gone now. You know, the Jaguars are done with the stiffs, and you have to be honest about this. You have to be truthful. They beat Tennessee when Tennessee was winless. They beat St. Louis when St. Louis was winless on a 15-game losing streak.
Was that too close of a game to have, though, for playing a winless team?
Probably, but it's a win.
That doesn't matter. Win's a win.
That's right. It really is. They beat Kansas City when Kansas City had one win. They, of course, beat Buffalo yesterday when Buffalo had three wins and still does have three wins and was playing a backup quarterback. And I don't know what that was all about. I know Perry Fuel was, in his first game as interim head coach. But, I got to tell you, there were receivers running wide open in that secondary. And I think Trent Edwards would have given the Buffalo Bills a much better chance of victory than Ryan Fitzpatrick did. He's a guy that just doesn't have the arm to get the ball to those receivers. But, hey, what the heck, it's a win. And the Jaguars are 6-4. They're tied with the Steelers. They're tied with the Broncos for the lead in the AFC wild card race. And if Houston was to win tonight, that would be four teams tied at 6-4 for the for one of the two spots, one of the two wild card spots in the AFC. I like the Jaguars' chances. I like, even though their schedule's tough, I kind of like their schedule because after this week's game in San Francisco, they've got three straight at home, and I'll take three straight at home against anybody.
I think our biggest game of the year, Victor, is against Houston.
No question. You know, and here's why. And this is interesting, folks. I hope you find this interesting because I did when I read up on it today. Say, for instance, the Jaguars found themselves in a three-team tiebreaker for the two wild card spots. And say those teams were Denver, Jacksonville, and Houston. You have to break the tie within the division between Jacksonville and Houston before you can break the tie between Jacksonville or Houston and Denver.
So it's like opponents right there.
Yeah, so for instance.
Head-to-head.
The Jaguars got the head-to-head right now. If they were to beat Houston the next time around, and they play Houston here on December the 6th.
Next, when we come back from San Francisco.
Right.
The next home game.
If they were to beat the Texans in the Jaguars' next home game, they will have clinched the tiebreaker against Houston that they would have to be able to go to step two in a three or more teams wild card tiebreaker. If you don't understand that call, and I'll try to explain it some more, but you have to break the tie within the division first. If Houston was to win that game against the Jaguars, of course, then you would have to go to down the line to other tiebreakers between the Jaguars and the Texans, and I don't know where the Jaguars stand with those right now.
You know, after the 49ers game, we've got nothing but AFC teams left.
And that's a good thing, too, especially if you win them. You know, right now, the good thing about the Jaguars is they've lost to two NFC teams, Arizona and Seattle. Those losses are useless. They're meaningless because they just don't figure in the tie-breaking process. If those had been AFC teams, you're screwed. Hey, we usually take a break at the quarter poll, so to speak, and that'll be coming up in a few minutes. And before I do that, I want to read something to you. It's a list I made. And it's in response. Why are you laughing? It's a sensitive stuff.
Lists are near and dear to my heart.
The American sporting public loves lists.
Yes.
And me, being the contemporary journalist that I am.
You are.
I'm going to give you a list, folks.
Thank you.
It's in response to a question I got and asked Vic. Good question. Question was, name 10 things about the Jaguars for which we are to be thankful in this Thanksgiving week.
Okay.
So here's my 10.
All right.
Number one, forgiving Jacksonville an identity. That's got to be number one. This town, no one even knew where the heck it was. Johnny Carson said it was the drain plug for Georgia. What kind of an identity
is
that?
Johnny Carson.
The drain. The drain for Georgia. It's not the drain for Georgia any longer, and one of the big reasons is that everybody now knows the name Jacksonville and where Jacksonville is because of the Jaguars. They have truly given this town an identity, and I want you to remember this, folks. The Jaguars are the only team, truly the only team, that bears the name Jacksonville. All right? Florida State, whatever, don't carry the name, don't bear the name Jacksonville. The Jaguars do. It's not the Florida Jaguars. It's the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number two, for making Sunday a special day. I think you know what that means. I think we all feel a little hop in our step on Sundays. And yesterday clearly was a special day. I'm going to do three more. I'm going to take it down to five. We'll take a break, and then we'll do the next five when we come back on. Ooh, after the break.
Tease.
Becoming a
look
professional
at you.
Radio
wow.
person, Joe. Just like Brian Sexton. Number three.
Don't push it.
Number three. For giving our children a team they can use to define their youth. the old guys, like myself, how do we count time? You know, I can tell you that Bill Mazeroski's home run against the Yankees in 1960 was the first important moment in my life.
100% with you. Sports is a great way to tell time.
It's a great timeline. Number four, for driving prosperity and growth in our community. There's no denying that. And number five, to end the first half of these before we go to a break, for being the driving force. Listen to this closely, folks. This is a fact. For being the driving force in the construction of a stadium that has allowed Jacksonville to remain a hub for college football, too. We'll come back after the break, and I'll give you five more.
There you go. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and a whole bunch more. Stop by Gate today. Vic will be back here on Jaguars Monday on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday on your flagship station for Jaguars football. News Talk Radio, WOKV. As soon as we get back to, right before we get to Vic's list, we want to talk to the parents out there. Now, if you want your kids to meet Eben Britton and Eugene Monroe, all you got to do is visit the Dailies at Bay Meadows in 9A tomorrow night from 5:30 to 6:30. Eben and Eugene will be there signing autographs and taking pictures. So head on out to the Dailies at Bay Meadows in 9A tomorrow night.
Those are two real good guys. Two real good guys, and Britton's a talker. Monroe's a thinker. You know, he's a little slower talker, but Britton really talked your ear off. I like both of those guys
cool.
a lot. All right, back to this list. It's 10 things about the Jaguars for which we, meaning the people of Jacksonville, the sports fans of Jacksonville, for all of us in Jacksonville, have to be thankful in this Thanksgiving week. I gave the first five. They are, I'll repeat them, for giving Jacksonville an identity, for making Sunday a special day, for giving our children a team they can use to define their youth, for driving prosperity and growth in our community, and for being the driving force in the construction of a stadium that has allowed Jacksonville to remain a hub for college football, too. Now, number six, for making ticket prices affordable in a league that is rapidly becoming too expensive for the common fan. I am completely understanding of anyone who says it's too expensive. It is too expensive. The NFL is too expensive for most fans, but not here in Jacksonville. This is not too expensive. There are seats in this stadium that are affordable for anybody. Number seven, for the charitable efforts with which the Weavers, especially Dolores Weaver and the Jaguars Foundation, have blessed this town. I love that woman. She does a sensational job, and she's legit. No phony stuff there. I mean, she's really genuine in her caring for those who need it. Number eight, and this is big with me because I'm a true Hall of Fame type guy. I love the history of the game and revere the men who have played the game. Number eight, for legends of the game such as Tony Boselli, Mark Brunell, Jimmy Smith, and Fred Taylor, all of whom have etched their names in NFL history and will forever carry the name Jacksonville next to their own. Think about that. Next to their own. When you think of Tony Boselli, you think of Jacksonville. The same thing with Mark Brunell, Jimmy Smith, Fred Taylor. Number nine, for 1996. That very, very special season. And number 10, for the patience and commitment Wayne Weaver has shown in the face of what has been a season of disappointing attendance. That's the bummer in all of this. Now, folks, do you want to run the risk of losing all of that? That's the question we have to ask ourselves. Do we want to run the risk? Well, just listen to that list or go back and think about what you heard. There is so much there that goes right to the heart and soul of this town. And we can't allow that to go away. We have to keep it.
So are you saying that it's not a done deal, that sometime this team is gone, it's out of here?
I never said it was a done deal. I'm saying that 45,000 ain't going to get it done. I mean, Wayne Weaver said it. I quoted him in an interview in his office that he did a month and a half or so ago. He said it recently in an interview with another guy that, I forget where the guy is from, Garber. I forget He was ESPN guy, ESPN.com, I believe. He did a fabulous story. And Wayne said it again. You know, he was asked again, will 45,000, is this franchise viable if it continues to draw 45,000 people? And he said, no, it's just not. It's got to improve. I think everybody understands.
Well, that's what I was asking. But you're saying there is a chance that it's going to stay here,
well,
provided
course.
Things turn around.
Yes, but yes, absolutely. The tickets have to be purchased. And not to 50,000 isn't the standard. And 60,000 isn't the standard. The standard is 67,164. These are not hotels built on the idea of 80% occupancy. These are stadiums built on the premise of 100% occupancy. That's what you have to be to compete with the Green Bays and the Pittsburghs and the New Yorks and the Chicagos and the Philadelphias and the New Englands and the Clevelands and the Denvers and the Tennessees. You've got to be sold out. Why don't we get our first call of the evening?
Yo, before we do that, you're going to post that list?
You want to type it up?
What do you think? Yeah.
No, I'm not going to.
You aren't going to put it on.
It's exclusive to this show.
Okay.
You got to have ears.
How about that?
Yeah. Let's talk to Trevor in Montreal, who wants to talk about Mercedes Lewis. Good evening, Trevor.
Hey, Vic. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Before I make my comment about Mercedes Lewis, I just wanted to say, since I've been a Jaguars fan, it seems like even in those years where we went 12-4 and 11-5 a couple years ago, we're always involved in close games, even when we're supposed to win by 15. It's just, to me, it's always been that way.
That's the league.
Yeah, no, that's the way it's designed, and that's what makes it exciting. I mean, mm-hmm. This weekend in particular, there was a ton of close games. It was actually a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And, for Mercedes Lewis, it's just, I realized yesterday when I was watching the game, the last 3 weeks, you know, in overtime and when we came back the last 2 weeks, he's made, like, huge catches in the final drives, and I just thought it was a pretty good improvement because for the last couple of years, he definitely had some issues with dropping the ball. He's been clutch this year.
Well, what we know about Mercedes Lewis already is that he's a good blocker. Okay, so that's, in my opinion, half of the job description of a true tight end. If you're not a blocker, then you're not a tight end. You're just a wide receiver lined up tight. Mercedes Lewis is a true tight end. He blocks. Right now, he is sitting on 22 catches for 348 yards and 2 touchdowns, and his average per catch is 15.8 yards. Whoa! Oh, that's big. In fact, that's bigger than Mike Sims Walker's 14.8. It's bigger than Torrey Holt's 13.6. It's bigger than Mike Thomas's 8.9. Of the 20 or more catch guys on the team, Mercedes Lewis is the leader in average per catch, 15.8. That's outstanding. So he's having a really good year. I'm not going to say that he's having a Pro Bowl year, but he is having a quality season.
Who do you think is a better overall tight end besides Gates in the AFC?
No, Gates isn't an all-around tight end. He's a wide receiver lining up tight. He's just an average blocker. If you're looking at true tight ends, you know, then you look at guys like Mercedes Lewis, Heath Miller, Bo Scaife in Tennessee, blocks and catches. I don't think he's in the category with the guy I really liked, if you like more catch than block, is Owen Daniel in Houston, but he's gone for the season. That's a tremendous loss for the Texans. You know, he's really an exquisite pass-catching tight end. You know, I have to go through my list. Tony Gonzalez has always been more of a catcher than a blocker. I like the guys who really are adept at both. You know, I want a guy who really is what you call a true tight end so that the defense – so that you know you're going to cover him with the strong safety, as opposed to, you know, when you got a tight end who's as good a blocker as he is a pass catcher, then they have to play the defense to his side. The defense has to be strong to his side. That's when you can start to do some things in the run game and in the pass game according to formation. Trevor, is there anything else? I'm up against a break.
No, that's it. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks,
Joe. You going to take me into the news?
I can take you into the news.
Please do.
Watch this. Jaguars fans, vote for your favorite teacher to be the Community First Credit Union Teacher of the Week. Your teacher could win club seats to a Jaguars home game. That's all part of First Down Touchdown Teachers. Visit CommunityFirstFL.org for all the details. News is next on your flagship station for Jaguars football, News Talk Radio, WOKV. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday on your flagship station for all things Jaguars, News Talk Radio, WOKV. This portion of Jaguars Monday is brought to you by Best Buy. Remember to stop by the new Best Buy in the St. John's Town Center. All right, gang, you want to talk to Vic? Here's how you do it. 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Or if you're calling from outside the area, 1-800-355-NFL-1. Victor?
The Jaguars dropped a couple spots in the offensive rankings this week, and they improved a couple spots in the defensive rankings. Jaguars offense was 10th overall in the league. Now it's 12th. The running game stayed at 6th in rushing, 17th in passing. I think 17 is a little bit of a fall. It might have been 16 last week, so it's very little fall on offense. The numbers again, 12 overall, 6 rushing, 17 passing. On defense, I think the Jaguars were 26th overall. Now they're 23rd. They are 18th against the run and 25th against the pass. You know, the real good ranking, of course, is the rush offense. 6th is elite. That's very, very good. I'm looking here. The Jets remain number 1 in rushing. Number 2 is Tennessee. Of course, Chris Johnson. We're having trouble finding number 3. Number 3 is Carolina. Number 4 is Miami. Number 5 is New Orleans. You know, New Orleans is number 1 in overall in offense. 5 in rushing, 6 in passing. You know, I can remember when the Saints weren't so balanced. They sure are now. They run it well. They throw it well. And their defense is better than it was a year ago. They're 17th overall in defense, which is respectable. The Jaguars, as I said, are through that what we call soft spot in the schedule, soft part of the schedule. The opponents coming up at San Francisco, Houston, Miami, and Indianapolis are a different level. Don't be fooled by San Francisco's record. The 49ers are 4-6, but they are better than a 4-6 team. You know, they took Indianapolis to the wire a few weeks ago. This is a step up in competition. Again, at San Francisco this week. But the thing that the Jaguars have going for them is after they come back from San Francisco, 3 consecutive home games, Houston, Miami, and Indianapolis. And, you know, Indianapolis at that point in the season, which would be week 15, they could be clinched. They could play reserves. So it looks good. It really does look good for the Jaguars. I never thought that at this stage of the game, which is to say stage of the season, which is to say Thanksgiving the week, that we would be talking about the Jaguars as a playoff contender, but they are absolutely without a doubt in the thick of the playoff race and one of the leaders for a wild card spot in the AFC. We have some callers. And Joe, why don't we go to Justin in Kentucky, who wants to talk about Mike Sims Walker. Good evening, Justin.
Good evening, Vic. I listen to the show every week.
Good, thank you.
I was wondering if Mike Sims Walker keeps at his current pace that he'll make the Pro Bowl?
Probably not, because he plays wide receiver, and this league is just chock full of big, popular, recognizable names at wide receiver. The names that are going to get the fan vote, the names Fitzgerald and Ward, Hines Ward, and you know, the names that everybody recognizes. For instance, the guy out in Denver from UCF, help me out, Brandon Marshall. All right, Now, he's not only a very good receiver, but he's a person of a kind of Terrell Owens infamy right now. He's an infamous person after that summer of controversy. People eat that up. They eat that up. They love the modern fan loves players of controversy. So a guy like Brandon Marshall, all summer long, he's doing all the wrong things, and he's piling up votes, for the Pro Bowl. I don't think Mike can do that. Now, I will tell you that Mike right now is sitting on 47 catches, 694 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Now, he is going to have, if he stays healthy, he's going to have a Jimmy Smith kind of year, which means that we're finally going to be able to answer the question when someone asks, when will the Jaguars get another Jimmy Smith, get another Keenan McCardle-type receiver? Well, they have one. Mike Sims-Walker is clearly a player of number one wide receiver designation. He's worthy of it. He is it. And with the kind of year he's having this year, next year you can start talking about him as a Pro Bowl candidate. Now, that's my opinion. Maybe I'm all wet, but that's the way I see it.
Right. With his size, he is just so elusive, and he just burns people. I mean, he just amazes me every week.
Yeah. He's having a great year.
I would just like to say that I'm so thankful that this team has Gene Smith for a general manager.
Yeah, he's made all the difference. When you look at his draft picks, and it's not just the draft picks. You look at the players in pro personnel that he has plugged in. It's really the body of work is a flat-out A+. You know, let me tell you what the difference is between pro personnel and college scouting. There are two departments within a personnel department. One is the college scouting department, and the other one is the pro personnel department. College scouting, obviously you know what it is. That's scouting college players. The pro personnel department scouts players who are already in professional football, whether it be the Arena League, the Canadian Football League, or the National Football League, or whatever league. It scouts players, or a semi-pro league. It scouts players who have already gone through the draft and are now either out on the street or in another league or whatever. When I look at the Jaguars roster and I look at the players the Jaguars have on their roster who have gone through, who have come through pro personnel, Nate Hughes, Anthony Smith.
Brackenridge is really good, too.
William Middleton, Tyrone Brackenridge, Courtney Green, Gerald Alexander, Jeremy Kane, Adam Seward, Torrey Holt, Ernest Wilford, Montavious Stanley, Atiya Ellison, Luke McCown, Keenan Forney. Hold on. I mean, the list is it's unbelievable. Trey Thomas. This new guy, the tackle, offensive lineman, McQuiston. The defensive tackle, Greg Peterson. Those are reserves. If I go to the starting lineup, let's see, Jordan Black, Sean Considine, Tyrone Brackenridge, and Brian Smith. I mean, that is a load. There can't be another team in the league that has a pro personnel department that has put those many men on a roster. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal, the job that Gene Smith and the personnel department has done.
Thank you very much. And I just want to say, I think the coaching staff has done a phenomenal job this year as well. And yeah. I'll take it off the air.
Okay, they all have. And thank you for your call. What do you have to say, Joe?
Well, we should take a break. But I noticed on your list, you never mentioned Shaq Harris.
You mean you're referring to playmakers?
Playmaker.
You know, I'll tell you one playmaker.
Yeah.
Shaq drafted.
Matt Jones.
I'll give you another playmaker. Shaq drafted.
Go ahead.
Maurice Jones-Drew.
How about that?
That was a pretty good pick.
Was that his decision, you think?
if he gets the blame for all the other ones,
all right,
he gets the credit for that one.
Okay, fair enough.
And that guy, that little guy's got this team on his back, and he's carrying it. And by the way, he didn't get all the yards you'd like him to have yesterday, you know, but he had 25 carries. And there are coaches who will tell you it's not about yards, it's about carries.
And what about the blocking he does?
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
That was a pretty good pick.
Yeah.
Smarty.
Sorry. Fans enter to win $50,000 towards your new home with Prudential Network Realty's Take It to the House drawing. One winner will be chosen from each home game. You and a guest could win tickets, a parking pass, and a chance to win $50,000. Just log on to PrudentialNetworkRealty.com for all the details. Vic will be back right here on Jaguars Monday on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday. This portion of Jaguars Monday is brought to you by North Florida's labor unions, a job done on time and on budget. That's the union way. And the way to get a hold of Vic is easy. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351, outside the area, 1-800-355-NFL-1, Victor.
You know, folks, sometimes teams have, it just goes right for them, and it just continues to go right, and other teams get snake bit, and they can't stop getting snake bit. You know what I'm trying to say? I mean, yesterday, the Jaguars benefited from two touchdowns being nullified, two Buffalo touchdowns being nullified by penalties. One of them was a 53-yard touchdown pass. I'm not saying the penalties didn't occur, but, you know, not all violations are seen by the officials. Let me tell you, I saw Jordan Black commit the equivalent of a tackle. That's how badly he held a guy yesterday, but it wasn't seen. It happens. Some teams get on a roll, and luck just continues to follow them. And other teams get into some kind of a marriage with misfortune, and they can't get a divorce. Well, here's where I'm going with all this. This is this week's schedule as it pertains to the other teams that are, I'm going to say, tied with the Jaguars for the lead in the wild card race. And I'm going to include Houston in that. I'm going to say Houston beats Tennessee tonight. They go to 6-4, which then would tie Houston with the Jaguars, the Steelers, and the Broncos at 6-4 in the wild card race for those two AFC wild card spots. Now, this is the schedule for those four teams. Of course, we know the Jaguars are at San Francisco. That's a daunting game. No question about it. That's a toughie. But listen to what the other teams are facing. The New York Giants at Denver. Houston hosts the Colts, and Pittsburgh travels to Baltimore. I got to tell you what, that is a favorable schedule for the Jaguars. I don't think any of those teams win. I don't think Denver beats the Giants. I don't think the Texans beat the Colts, and I don't think the Steelers beat Baltimore. Now, that's going to bring Baltimore into the mix, of course. But if there's some way the Jaguars can get a win in San Francisco, I honestly believe, I truly believe that if the Jaguars win in San Francisco Sunday, that on Monday, when I talk to you next Monday on this show, the Jaguars will be the number one team and maybe the only 7-4 team in the AFC. In other words, number one in the wild card race. It's going the Jaguars' way. Luck is following them. This is a team that is being favored by fate right now. Let's go to a caller. His name is Philip. He's in Orange Park. Good evening, Philip.
How you doing, Vic?
Couldn't be better.
All right. Well, I guess the first thing I wanted to say was what's really surprised me this year is the resiliency of this team. I remember watching the Jags of last year and years before, especially that 06 year, where we would get behind and we couldn't get anything going. And, you know, watching yesterday's game, I see, you know, Garrard fumble, you know, with 8 minutes left, and I'm like, here we go again. You know, we can't beat these lowly teams, and we come back, we, you know, have the winning touchdown drive. It puts all the faith in the team, you know, with the job Jack's doing in Garrard. But I guess my real question for you was, with the job Gene Smith has done this year and everything he's put together, what do you see on the horizon for this team next year with bringing in people, and what do you think this team's capable of next year given that everybody's healthy. And I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
First of all, let me say this. I wish the Jaguars had Paul Posluszny. I mean, you want to talk all the people who don't like missed tackles, that's your guy, because he doesn't miss tackles. When he gets his hands on you, you're going down. What a wonderful performance that was by that middle linebacker yesterday. All right. As far as what the Jaguars will do in next year's draft and in next year's, well, next offseason's entire personnel haul, it's my hope and it is my belief, my firm belief, that Gene Smith will not change his ways. I don't believe he will look at his roster and he'll say, gee, we're there. We're only a couple players away now, so let's draft for need. Let's get that defensive, let's get that pass rusher we need. Let's get that corner we need. Well, it certainly wouldn't be a corner because I don't think they need a corner. I think the two they have are real good. Let's get that safety we need. I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to stay true to his philosophy of draft the best available players, which is what he did this year. This team is built. This year's team is built on the philosophy of draft the best available player, and I think Gene will stick with that. I think he's going to stick to his board, and he's going to pick good players, or he's going to, if he doesn't need a guy at that position, he's going to find a way to recoup that value and trade back. So my answer to your question is I think you're going to see more of the same. I think they're going to bring more quality athletes in here, and who doesn't need quality athletes? Who doesn't want players that are better than players you would have otherwise picked because they fit a need? What if they don't fit the need? What if it turns out they can't play? Now you've really
been there, done that.
Now you've got it. You got two strikes on you. You've spent a whole lot of money on a guy who can't play, so you haven't satisfied your need. That's number one. And number two, your competition has the player you should have drafted, and he's going to be playing against you for 10 years. What do you think of that, Joe?
Like I said.
Did you hear one word I said?
Been there. No, I was watching TV. No, I the TV's not even on. I agree. Well, we've been there and done that.
Right. Yeah, there's going to be, I guarantee you, remember I said this on this Thanksgiving week, 2009. Next year, when we're doing the draft coverage, we're going to get call after call after call from people who think the Jaguars are there. They're on the doorstep. They only need this or they need that. And they're going to say, we should trade up for this pass rusher. We should draft this guy here because he's the safety we need, or he's the impact outside linebacker. You watch. We're going to have that. Even following a year in which Gene Smith proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that drafting the best available player is the philosophy that will yield the greatest reward and the most productivity for your draft, we're going to have people who are going to say,
the need, folks.
Yeah. Go for the need, because they're right there. They're only a player away. Nobody is a player away.
Say goodnight, Victor.
Good night, Joe.
Good night, Victor. Vic will be back, too, Wednesday night for Jaguars This Week, along with the Brian Sexton and Jeff Lagerman. And, of course, Brian's here tomorrow with Jack Del Rio right here on News Talk Radio WOKV.
You've been listening to Jaguars Monday with Vic Ketchman, brought to you by Prudential Network Realty. This is AM 690 and 106.5 FM, News Talk Radio WOKV.